Our speaker this morning is Reverend Elder Richter. He's the pastor of Hope Lutheran Church in Southwest St. Louis. And I feel like I know him well. I've heard so much about him. He served as pastor of my home church for several years, unfortunately, before I was there. He graduated from here in 1957. He's a member of the St. Louis Clergy for Life Board, of which President Spitz is the chairman. And Pastor Richter has also served as chairman of the Iowa East Committee. This morning he's going to talk about the place of refuge for the pregnant and the unborn. Reverend Richter.
Thank you very much. It's really good to be here in the midst of your finals week. And I will try to keep you awake. And I'll try not to give anything that will resemble a test. However, we have an information sheet later, which we'll be using. But I'm glad that you saw fit this morning, in spite of your busy schedule and perhaps the fatigue that you feel, that something prompted you to come here because you're concerned about the abortions that are taking place in our land, and that you're concerned about life and the sanctity and the sacredness of life. We believe in the sanctity of life. That is, that life is a gift of God, and that He is the giver, and only He can be the receiver of life. Now, we get excited about a lot of things in our society. Not too long ago, we were excited about three whales that were trapped up in Alaska as the winter waters closed in upon them. And I remember the President of the United States saying, he said that my prayers and my concern are with you, and if there's anything that I can do, why, my powers are at your disposal. We can get excited about three whales. But what are we doing about the 1,000 times 3 and more children that are being trapped and then being eliminated every day in our nation? Not too long ago, all of us were horrified with the news that a gunman had gone on the rampage in Stockton, California, and had killed 5 children. And all the nation, I'm sure, was affected by it, and so we should. We should never become insensitive to these things that happen. But how is it that we have become insensitive to the fact that 4,000 children each day are not just gunned down, but are torn limb from limb and are exterminated? You know, we cannot plead ignorance. We perhaps sit in judgment over against the Lutherans in Germany who must have seen from the chimneys the smoke ascending from the concentration camps, and they must have known what was taking place. And many of them did nothing. Or there was, like Pastor Bonhoeffer, who spoke out. There were a few. But how can we sit in judgment over against them when we know that in the abortatoriums throughout the land, every day, including Sunday, their most profitable day of the week, 4,000 children are being aborted? We become insensitive to this fact. And so the first thing that I wish to do with you is to take you through the fact sheet that you've received, not a test, but I hope that perhaps it will be helpful to you on some basic facts as you go out into the pastoral ministry. How many of you are last year men here? Great. So let's just go through this and pause for a moment for you just to write down or think what the fill-in answer might be. But first of all, from Psalm 139, verse 1, we read, "For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb." Each one of us believe that we are a special creation of God, from our mother's womb. Jeremiah 1:5 says, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you, and before you were born, I set you apart." God has a plan for us, an eternal plan, and He has consecrated us and set us aside. He has a plan for each individual. Luke 1:44 says, "As soon as the sound of your greeting reached my ears, the baby in my womb leaped for joy." Of course, Elizabeth is speaking about what happened in her to John as they met Mary and the unborn Jesus. We believe that Jesus was conceived by the Holy Spirit, that He received His human identity in conception. And we know how Christ loved children. We know how the early church had one of its favorite art pieces, the Madonna and Child. And so from the early church, the Christians were concerned about the unborn and the rescue of the unborn. Then we come to Psalm 31, verse 15. My times are in your hand. My moments, my seconds, my hours, my days, my years are in your hand. They're in God's hands, not in my hands or somebody else's hands. Then Amos 1:13 says, "For three sins of Ammon, even for four, I will not turn back my wrath, because he ripped open the pregnant women of Gilead." God has a heart for the pregnant woman with child. And Ammon did the unforgivable thing of ripping open these women, and the nation of Ammon, would pay for it dearly, because God is on the side of the widow, the fatherless, the pregnant woman with child. Proverbs 24:11-12. It says, "Rescue those being led away to death. Hold back those staggering towards slaughter. If you say, 'But we knew nothing about this,' does not he who weighs the heart perceive it? We cannot plead ignorance. Nor is it enough for us to say, 'Well, I'm against it. My church body is against it. My pastor is against it. We've got a resolution against it.' The question is, what are we doing about it to prevent it? What sort of witness are we making?" You remember in the Old Testament, where if a man was killed out in the field, the elders from the nearest town had to take a heifer and go to a valley with running water, break the neck of that heifer, wash their hands, saying, "We are innocent of the blood shed in our territory. We are innocent. We don't know anything about it. And if we did, we'd bring the person to justice." You see, not only is there the sin of commission, but there are the sins of omission and of silence in the face of something that has far exceeded the Holocaust. Three, fourfold exceeded the Holocaust of Germany. It was, Everett Koop said, only after 1967, Everett Koop, the Surgeon General, says, only after 1967 did we start talking about the quality of life rather than the equality of life. Only then did we stop talking about the sanctity of life and instead the relativity of the value of life. Let's look at some of the important facts that we must know. Non-therapeutic abortions have become the second most surgical procedure after circumcision. Non-therapeutic means that the abortion is not performed to ensure the life or health of the woman. A father cannot legally protect his baby from abortion, and many fathers have tried to do so. Doctors perform, we're filling out this sheet for those of us who are coming in, perform 1 to 1.5 million abortions per year in the United States alone. That's approximately one for every two live births. It's 426 out of 1,000. Of the women who have had them, 75% are unmarried, 32% are teenagers, and 20% are women who have had a previous abortion. In all, since 1973, 23 million. That is the equivalent to the population of the heartland of America. That's equivalent to the population of Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri, Arkansas, Kentucky, North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, and Kansas. Every 20 days, an atomic bomb falls on America and eliminates the children, the unborn children, every 20 days, the equivalent of an atomic bomb falling on Hiroshima. And in 1973, when Roe versus Wade, it was a deception that brought it about. Recently, on the Carl T. Rowan, in the newspaper column, he revealed that the woman, which was Jane Roe, deceived the court in saying that she was pregnant because of a rape. The rape never took place. She was pregnant by her boyfriend. She wanted an abortion. We go on. A woman may have any abortion at any time during the 9 months of pregnancy. In the last trimester, the state may protect the life of the child if it wishes, except when the life and health of the mother is in jeopardy. Now, we as a church body believe that the life of the mother must be considered. But the state's interpretation of life, and then they've added health, is so broad that the child's life is never considered. More abortions have been performed than all the casualties in all the wars ever fought by our armed forces. 40 times the casualties of the Second World War. 40 times and more. The baby's heartbeat, brain waves, organs are all fully functioning by 12 weeks in the womb. 12 weeks. There are two different heartbeats, two different brain waves. Two different persons. Fetal tissue is now being used. We know recently the University of Colorado at Denver planted fetal tissue in a brain of a man who had Parkinson's disease. That was just in the last month. Previous to that, it was denied. A woman in Minnesota wanted to become pregnant and then used the bone marrow from her unborn child to help cure her one-year-old child. Another woman in Virginia had requested that she would become pregnant and that the placenta of the unborn child would be used by her to cure her severe case of diabetes. We see what's in store in the future if we continue down the road. How many abortions are performed after 20 weeks, 5 months in the womb? How many? 30,000. 30,000. How many casualties did we have in the Vietnam War? About 54,000. And that was over 9-10 years. In 1 year, we almost equal the casualties of the Vietnam War. After an abortion, what is the increased chance of having a stillborn baby after the next pregnancy? 60%. Let me say that we as pastors see many firstborn pregnancies that they have a stillborn, a miscarriage. We don't ask questions, but we must know that these people need pastoral care. And maybe in the back of their mind, they're wondering why this happened. Now, there are other reasons also why there are many pregnancies that are miscarried. But we see a lot of them, and we need to be sensitive to it. How many U.S. abortions result each year because of rape? 100. 100. How many U.S. women are reported to have died from abortions in the year before they became illegal? 100. These facts are gotten from Dr. Wilkie's book, Questions and Answers About Abortion. Dr. Wilkie was on the news last night. When it came before the Supreme Court in 1973, how many children, how many pregnancies there were because of incest or rape, Dr. Nathanson at that time, who was performing many abortions in New York, said to the Supreme Court that he estimated that there were at least 10,000. I had lunch with him recently. He said it was just a wild guess. I had no idea. Because he said that, one of the wives of the Supreme Court pleaded with her husband to vote to allow abortion the next day. Today, there are 3.5 taxpayers supporting each retired person. In 50 years, the number will be 1.5. Now, we know that now, today, we're having difficulty supporting Medicare, Social Security, and so on. And the aging population is becoming heavier and heavier. But we haven't seen anything yet. In 50 years, the chickens will come home to roost. The wheels of God's justice will grind exceedingly fine in the next 50 years. And suddenly people will say, where have all the children gone? Where have all the children gone? Europe today is not keeping up with their population level. They're losing their population. They are putting out ads in France, in fact, for people to have more babies. Did we know that? The only reason that our population is increasing a little bit is because they're pressing on our borders to get in. Your fingerprints, turning the page, today are the same ones you had when you were 8 weeks in the womb. Abortion is the sixth leading cause of maternal death in the U.S. In 1987, the city of St. Louis had 2,617 births and 958 abortions. In St. Louis County, the number of births was 1,980 and 902 abortions. By age 19, 8 in 10 males and 7 in 10 females are sexually active. St. Paul would say are fornicating in the United States. By age 16, one-third of all white and one-half of all black unmarried girls have had sexual intercourse. By 1950, only 4%, 1950, when I was in the seminary like you, 4% of all births were out of wedlock. 4%. By 1982, this figure had risen to nearly 20%, and we think it was leveling off. Presently, January 1987, approximately 31% of all firstborn babies in the United States are conceived out of wedlock. The problem in the pastoral ministry concerning this matter has increased tremendously, which we could talk about then. The rate for white teens is about 60%, while the rate for black teens exceeds 90% out of wedlock. These figures are all from the governor's interagency group on adolescent pregnancy, which was formed about a year ago, the governor of Missouri. In 1980, an estimated 48% of all pregnant teenagers gave birth, 39% obtained an abortion, and 13% miscarried. More than 500,000 babies are born to teenage mothers in the United States each year. More than half of the teenage mothers will have a repeat pregnancy within 2 years. More than half. If your teenage member comes to you and you learn that she is pregnant, realize that more than half of them will have a repeat pregnancy unless you strengthen her with the Word of God and with the support of fellow youth who are Christians. The Center for Population Options estimates that the direct financial cost of adolescent pregnancy to society is currently, just guess what it would be. Put it down. Here it is. $17 billion. If the teenage mother does not finish high school, there is a 90% chance she will live in poverty. Even if she does finish high school, she will have a 75% chance of living in poverty if she remains single. The teenage marriage is twice as likely to end in separation or divorce as marriage between older partners. One out of every five children in the U.S. lives in poverty. Over half of all poor children live in families headed by a single female. Now, let's go back. We are facing, I think, the same situation which the Christians faced in the apostolic and post-apostolic time. Many times I feel that we're back there, and this is actually the post-Christian era, but actually it's the era really back there in the first and second century. Now that gives me a great thrill as a pastor to realize that I have the hope that the world needs today in Jesus Christ, and that there is the possibility that through the gospel, society can still be changed as the early Christians changed it. We can make our influence felt as Christians. And again, they didn't wait for the Roman Senate. They didn't wait for the Roman courts. They didn't wait for the bishops to pronounce. But it was a grassroots movement that changed the world. And our place of refuge is a grassroots movement. The Epistle of Barnabas states, "You shall not murder a child by abortion or kill it when it is born." The Didache, which was like the early church constitution, says, "Do not murder a child by abortion or kill a newborn infant." The Hippocratic Oath, which is 470 before Christ, reads in part, "I will give no deadly drug to any, though it be asked of me, nor will I counsel such, and especially I will not aid a woman to procure abortions." The Declaration of Geneva states in part, "I will maintain the utmost respect for human life from the time of conception, even under threat. I will not use any medical knowledge contrary to the laws of humanity." The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod has consistently taken a strong position in support of human life and an opposition to willful abortion. Since abortion takes a human life, abortion is not a moral option except as a tragically unavoidable byproduct of medical procedure to prevent the death of another human being. So, we're against abortion. So, what is your answer to the coat hanger? This is the placard that the pro-abortion people are now carrying. You've perhaps seen it. Watch for it. They're saying, "What will we do when we go back to the coat hanger?" And I am very concerned. We say we're against abortion, and perhaps the Supreme Court will revise the Roe versus Wade decision. I would think that they're going to outlaw abortion, perhaps, except for rape and incest, or they're going to throw it right back to the state. But then you are going to see mass demonstrations in America. Remember the days of prohibition? 1920 to 1933? What happened? It was overthrown because it was not practical for the land. And there are hundreds of thousands of women that are demanding the right to abort their children. And the land is going to have a problem of civic righteousness and of perhaps choosing the lesser of evils. And unless we have an answer in the Christian church to the coat hanger, society is going to tune us out. They can say, you're piously speaking against abortion, but what are you doing to help the woman who is desperate? And that's where our program, the place of refuge for the pregnant and the unborn, comes in. It is a grassroots thing. Our vision is that on every church bulletin board, there would appear this logo, marking it as a place of refuge for the pregnant and the unborn. That it would become as common as the Lutheran Hour sign or as common as the handicap sign. And you know, the handicap signs caught on slowly. But now a lot of places and a lot of churches and a lot of businesses and banks and parking lots have them. And it says something. It says that these people are sensitive to the needs of the handicapped. And when we have this logo on our church bulletin board, it is to say something. It is to say not that there is a physical shelter. No, we aren't putting up people in our basements, in our church basements. That's not the idea, in our church auditoriums. That's not the idea. But we are saying, here is a people. Here is a people who are compassionate, who bring you under the shelter of their wings, as Jesus in the last Sunday's gospel said, I would bring you under the shelter of my wings. This is our vision. It is actually a vision that was born in my heart when I was a young boy. I belonged to the Clergy for Life here in St. Louis. We meet quarterly and here on the seminary, just here in the boardroom. Dr. Paul Spitz, president of our Missouri district, is president. Dr. Clark is a member of the board. Dr. Barth attends. And one day I was in the board meeting and I was saying, would to God that every congregation had a network like my little country congregation in southeastern Minnesota had. And I described this network, how they were a little congregation that was strict against sin, but compassionate toward the sinner. And I recalled how women who had had children out of wedlock back there, and that was really a great offense, would come and visit my parents. And I recall how one woman wept on my mother's shoulder and told her how sorry she was. I remember going with my parents to visit some relatives whose daughter had become pregnant. There was a network. There was a support system. There was a way of helping the woman who had fallen and become pregnant, not to say about the man who had caused it. And every Christmas Eve, there was a collection for the Lutheran Children's Friends Society in St. Paul, Minnesota. And I was saying to the board members, would to God that every congregation were like the cities of refuge in the Old Testament, where people could flee to and find shelter and help, where in their desperation, they did not have to use drastic means. And I recall my sister working in Winona, Minnesota, and one of the women from our little community also working there, and she was wearing her coat, her overcoat, continuously in the summertime. And she looked a little bit heavier than usual. And my sister and the other girls were wondering and suspicious. And then one day, she was not able to go to work because she was hemorrhaging. And they took her to the hospital. And they took along her suitcase. And when they opened the suitcase, there was the unborn there was the child that had been born dead. In desperation, this woman did not know what to do. And I said, would to God that we were like the cities of refuge, that instead of being a symbol of judgment of Moses, we were a symbol of the compassion of Christ. And people knew that they could come to our church so that if there is a pregnant girl next door and she shares with a church member and says, you know, I'm just broke up today. I can't believe it. This is what has happened. And finally comes out, my daughter's pregnant. And our church member can say, you know, we are a place of refuge and we have means of helping you. As happened in my parish last week is exactly what happened. We've been a place of refuge for 3 years. But we're beginning to see the effect that it's having, that finally it is filtering through. And that's the challenge that I place before you as future pastors, that we must hold before our people the image of what they are and what they can become. The body of Christ, reaching out to the woman at the well and reaching out to Mary Magdalene today. You realize that the woman at the well may have had many an abortion, and Christ brought her the water of life. Now, I want to take you through briefly what the steps are for establishing a place of refuge. A place of refuge can be established in 7 weeks. We have 350 packets out throughout the United States and Canada. Most of them are unopened. Again, we're against abortion, but it's hard for us to implement. These steps, while they're simple, practical, our program is about the simplest practical program that there is, are hard to effect in the parish because we get sidetracked and we don't follow through. We're against it, but the unopened packet remains on our desk. The congregation or parish designates itself as a place of refuge for the pregnant and the unborn. That it consciously says, we are a people of refuge. We are committed that its self-image is changed from one that we just sit there and say, yeah, isn't it bad? Yeah, it sure ought to stop. I hope the Supreme Court does something. To what sort of witness are we making? Do the people beyond our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod congregation know that we're for life? Does the community know that we are there to help? Secondly, the congregation or parish designates or establishes a local board or committee to supervise and coordinate the ministry to those with an untimely or problem pregnancy. You need a local board like the Board of Social Ministry, Lutherans for Life, the Board of Elders, maybe some Bible class, some board to coordinate the effort. Thirdly, the congregation or parish sees itself as a compassionate place for the pregnant and the unborn and informs and instructs its membership on the motive, program, and purpose. There is a program of instruction, not just preaching about it, but Bible study, showing the film strip on the place of refuge, We have a videotape now that will explain it to people. That, first of all, the motive is God's love for us in Jesus Christ. Jesus' love for little children. That, secondly, the program is a two-level program. One is referral. 95% or more of the parishes are on this level. And secondly, the care ministry, which is a more extensive. But any congregation can be on the first level of just referral to different agencies. Fourthly, the congregation or parish informs the community that it is a compassion place, that the word gets out into the community, as it did in Poplar Bluffs here in Missouri, through Pastor Whitmire. Three different denominations got together and formed a pro-life committee and became a place of refuge. And they informed the community. They contacted the mental health center, cooperated with them, the county nurse, the school counselor, distributed flyers throughout the community and in their churches. And in a short time, they had 30 women that they were helping. The congregation or parishes uses an agreed-upon logo. The logo, which is so attractive, was designed by Jim Wettstein, our artist resident here at the seminary. And what an attractive and an appealing logo that is. We want it as well-known as the handicap sign throughout our synod and in other pro-life churches. Specifically, the local board or committee shall be a group of compassionate people. We know about spiritual gifts and that there are some people who have the gift of leadership and there are some people who have the gift of compassion. Not everybody has the gift of compassion. I'm not sure John Calvin had the gift of compassion. He was a great leader. Sorry about that. But anyway, we have people in our parishes who have the gift of compassion, and they are to be sought out. And they are to serve on this committee or board. And then one person, preferably a woman, is the guidance person. And a woman is known in the parish as the one that people can contact. She's like a mother. She's open. She's not judgmental. People can call her on the phone and say, you know, we've got this problem. Not that the pastor isn't also involved. He's there, as I've been with many cases in my parish. But we believe that to have a good woman, an open woman, will be an inviting invitation to people to seek help. Shall identify church and community resources. So you are in a little congregation in Oneida, Iowa, as I was. And where are the resources? Certainly not in that little town of Oneida of 1,000 people. What are the resources in Des Moines? What are the resources in Omaha? What are the resources of our church in Fort Dodge? People just do not know. And we as pastors, one of the best things we can do is to have the committee get together the various pro-life agencies. Because the fact is that when people think about the problem of a pregnancy and who can help them, the one that they think of most is the one that they should think of the least. And that is Planned Parenthood. So we have to get out the word that there are agencies such as Birthright, who in the city here has a half a dozen different locations, who helps over 1,000 girls every year in our city, who has 200 volunteers. And so they, along with our Lutheran children's and family service here in the city, they are the two agencies that we refer the people most to. And I think of the family that came to me, And it was really something. They had been referred to me from another lady who works in the International Center. And when they walked into my office, they were all devastated. They had just learned the day before that their 16-year-old daughter was pregnant. About 2 weeks before, by the providence of God, they had started to attend one of our Lutheran churches. They were unchurched. When they sat down, the mother, who was a former Roman Catholic, you could just see she was totally shattered, like a broken mirror, shattered all the way through. The girl was bewildered and frightened. The stepfather sitting over here was uptight, not knowing what was happening. There was a wall between each one of them. I began to talk to them about the compassionate Christ and how Christ's invitation was, "Come unto me, all you who labor and are heavy laden." And whoever came to him, he would not turn aside. That there was forgiveness for all those who repented. And that it was not hopeless. There were alternatives, and we discussed them. There were agencies to help. And that God was a God who could take something like this, strengthen them as a family, and turn it for their good. That this is what we believed in the Christian church. And as I talked to them, it was marvelous, man. I saw the effect of the gospel. The walls crumbled down. The old bonds came together. They were melted together. Instead of despair, there was hope. And the whole thing changed. I talked kindly to the young girl about Christ, about future responsibilities. And when they left, they were strengthened. They were entirely different people. And I referred them to different agencies in the community. What a rewarding thing that was. And that can be the possibility for you and your parish. Fifthly, shall serve as a channel or referral to local church and community, community agencies. And fourth, here comes the second level now. The second level is the care ministry. Shall serve themselves if they so desire and are so equipped. They can receive more extensive training. One of ours did from Birthright itself on listening, reflecting, sorting out, communicating. We do not counsel. We do not counsel. That is a legal professional term I'm sure that you've been cautioned about. We guide, we help, we direct, we stand by, we do what the church has always done. We're a compassionate people. And so we can go to this second level as one of our churches in Independence, Missouri did. And you can see the big newspaper spread that was just this past Christmas, a big full-page spread of pictures. It is a joint effort between various churches in the community. The Roman Catholic Church has made a provision for one of their houses to be used. It is rented very reasonably. They have a house parent there. They have social workers available. They have doctors who will give, perform births. They have lawyers who will give legal counsel. They have people who will give occupational parent training. They have food. They have clothing. They have clothing for the children. Whatever the person needs. And they have seven women who are above 18 who were kicked out of their homes, from their families, had no place to go, and now they are in the Mother's Choice in Independence, Missouri. The last point is, shall above all bring Christ's healing and redeeming love and the forgiveness of sins to those who hunger after righteousness. Deal patiently and compassionately with those who may be indifferent to God's love, forgiveness, and strength. Give spiritual and emotional and physical help as unto the Lord. Our Lord is a compassionate Christ. And one of the things that we see is the fallout that takes place in the congregation, not only among those who have an untimely pregnancy, but older people. Recently, in January, we had about 5 minutes in our service on Life Sunday, which we talked about our place of refuge. The next day, a woman called me up and said, "Pastor, can I see you?" And I knew immediately why she was calling. And she described how she was quite sure that before her marriage, she had had an abortion. That the woman who performed the abortion held the mass of blood before her and said, "Well, we really don't know." That's a common thing that they say. We really don't know whether or not there is a human being there, the embryo of a human being. But she said, "Pastor, I believe it was." And so I had the privilege of leading her in confession, laying my hand on her head, and absolving her in the name of Christ. What a wonderful thing. I think of a young man who came to me and said, "Pastor, I have committed the unforgivable sin." He said, "I know that God will forgive a lot of things, but this thing He cannot forgive." I said, "What is it?" He said, "Before I was married, I had my present wife get an abortion. We should have 3 children instead of 2. I know that God cannot forgive me for that murder. And I, as a pastor, had the high privilege, as Christ Himself, to point out that in the Old Testament, David was a murderer. And he said, 'Wash me and I shall be clean.' That in the New Testament, Paul was a murderer. He said, 'I cast the lot for the death of the Christian.' But even though he was the chief of sinners, Christ's mercy and grace was greater. And again, I pronounce personal absolution upon him. And he left my office a free man, no longer carrying the burden of that guilt, which perhaps was affecting his present marriage greatly." That is the final thing, what we're leading to, that perhaps we will be able to share the redeeming, healing love of Christ to people. It is a grassroots thing. It is simple. It is practical. Let me just read to you what a few places say. From Corpus Christi, Texas. "We have a home for 6 girls now. Thank you for your help." From Louisville, Kentucky. "Your packet helped us get opportunities for life going. We received 500 calls. We operate a 24-hour hotline. It is staffed 24 hours a day from their homes through a diverter." Plymouth, Wisconsin. "I have looked at your packet. There are some excellent ideas. Will be presented to our social ministry board." Ontario, Canada. "It's a good program. The best and most practical I have seen to date. We baptized the baby of a teenager on Christmas Day." Well, we'd like to open it up for some questions. I'm sure that there are questions. We are different than some of the crisis pregnancy centers and so on. We can perhaps go into that. But first, let me open it up for any questions that you might have.
Do you have any of these packets with you today? Or
you can sign up, and the packet will be sent to you from the Missouri District, which works up the packet. They're $5, And it's helpful if you pay, if you're able to pay right away. And then you'll get it within a week or what in their mailing. And that packet is the philosophy, the timetable, the news release to the local newspaper, things like that.
Your presentation is very informative for me particularly, and I really appreciate it. Now, I think some of the things what you said is horrible, of course. Horrible in the sense of terrifying.
Yes.
And I think you said the right things to right audience. I think none of us agree, I believe, and agree with. But then, having said this, I have a couple of remarks or questions. Don't you think it would be, as a statesman for this important subject, I mean, you and us all included, maybe, it's more persuasive and convincing not just to talk about our side of the story, but rather what are some of the claims of abortion and the dispute? Because I have read here and there, you know, in newspapers and the like, what the abortionists have to say and what anti-abortionists have to say. But now, so happened that they told me what I agree. But the other arguments, they may sound blunted, but there are many intelligent people too, you know. So I think it may be a good idea, more productive.
Yes.
In telling that, that's one point. And the other point is this whole abortionist campaign in America, at least in my impression, is dealing with disease, very seldom symptoms. Now, for instance, the abortion itself, or anti-abortion, whatever, and then pregnant women, that is also disease too, already pregnant. In what way are you doing or are we doing on the symptom idea? In other words, how not to be pregnant? Now that is the real crucial issue. No matter how many people you help, but the more and more people be pregnant,
yeah,
out of wedlock, if you have quoted, you know,
yeah,
to me is definitely, I'd like to hear more about that, but I very seldom heard about this. I know it is a moral issue. It's the morals and society and everything like that. It's not easy point, but I think it sounds like just cleaning up water, you know, without thinking about where the issues, you know, stop.
Yeah.
Now the other one, the last one, is this is a little bit of we haven't had this debate here, you know, this is not here. The logo you are really proud of.
Yes, yeah, I think Jim did a fabulous job.
And if you were pregnant woman, if you were pregnant woman, how would you feel if you look at that kind of logo? You are the sympathizer and the so-called helper, compassionate person, and all this side, the other side. But if you were pregnant woman and look at and you see that miserable looking woman holding something which is undesirable, and then even the term like refuse there, in a way, it's positive, but it's a way negative. You know, the sympathizer is trying to offer something.
Yeah.
And how about the bottom part?
Yes.
For the pregnant and the unborn and the like. Now, all this in my mind, if you were or I were pregnant women ourselves and look at that, I may feel a little differently from what a pastor or other people. Now, I'm not disputing about the artwork.
Yeah.
It's a cultural difference, but.
Right.
If I were to look at from my out of my culture, man, if I look at, I don't even see what to look at that kind of picture because I'm miserable enough. Why do I have to look at it and go there?
Good point. Thank you very much. Let's just reverse those three questions. How would I feel? We searched long and hard for a logo that we thought would do just what you were saying. A logo that is not judgmental, that bespeaks shelter and compassion. And when the young girl, talking to young women who have had pregnancy, they feel exactly how that woman is looking. They have a problem, and they don't know how to solve it. There is a symbol of the heart, of compassion, and we have not hedged. We have not used clever deception, as Paul says. We have not covered up the fact that we are also concerned about the unborn. So we hope that we have answered some of those questions, perhaps not perfectly, but we searched, we had different sketches, and we eliminated them. Secondly, a preventive program. I think one of the most preventive thing in pregnancy is what I read in the newspaper this morning, that the Supreme Court yesterday ruled that Kentucky could require a waiting period for the parents to be informed. Now, previous to that, in Minnesota, the Eighth Circuit Court had upheld a 48-hour waiting period. In Pennsylvania, the Sixth Circuit Court had struck down a 24-hour waiting period. There were two different rulings. Thank God that yesterday the court ruled that in Kentucky they could have a waiting period to inform the parents. Why I say this is good? Because since Minnesota has had their waiting period of 48 hours, the number of teenage pregnancies has dramatically dropped. When you bring in the parent, and we as citizens can work to bring in the parental supervision, which will greatly help it. Then we can bring in people like Molly Kelly to speak to our youth, who spoke to our high school, Lutheran High School South youth, can bring in a woman like that who talks about sex respect. And that is a program that is spreading throughout the nation, sex respect. She really communicates with the youth, and she brings to them the real facts about disease, about the possibility of pregnancies, even with a condom and so on, that the youth say, hey, we better think twice before we look at sexual intercourse so glibly. The first thing, speaking to the what the pro-choice people, pro-abortion people are saying. Let me illustrate with the story of Ali McGraw. Ali McGraw last year told about the abortion that she had when she was 31 years of age. She describes becoming pregnant, not knowing what to do. Her career was just taking off. And here comes their philosophy that you spoke about. Her philosophy, as unreasonable as it seems, she said, I could not care for this child. This child would grow up with an inferiority complex. This child would feel unwanted. Rather than have this child feel unwanted, it would be better that this child would never be born. Now, that's their philosophy. We can say, well, that doesn't make sense, but that's the philosophy. And so she began to search out the secret abortion mill of the day, the coat hanger. And she describes going to an old hotel in West Manhattan, New York, climbing the 17 floors up to the top, past prostitutes, pimps, drug addicts, sitting lying in the hallway, finally getting to the 17th floor. There is complete silence. Other women are also gathered there. A man comes out with a soiled smock on. One after another, they go in. She arrives at 8 o'clock in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning, is not seen till 8 o'clock at night. She's the only one left. She wonders, what will happen to me? Will I be raped? Will I be maimed? Will I die on the table? Will I be killed? She goes in to see the doctor, and there's old porcelain equipment. There's an old steel table, rusted and dirty. She lies down on it. The doctor is jittery. He is almost hysterical when she asks questions. He screams at her to shut up. He gives her an injection of saline solution. She goes home, comes back the next morning, has the abortion. Ali McGraw says, it bothers me to this day. I'm not sure whether I did the right thing. I'm not sure whether or not it was a real human being. Religious leaders differ on the question. End of article. That's what I mean. We must speak compassionately and convincingly that we have a solution, that people like Ali McGraw need not feel as though they have no choice, that there's no solution. We are God's compassionate people. We worship a God who is a God of life and not of death, God of hope and not of despair. Well, my time is up. Just want to say that we've looked into the legal implications of this. You're sure to be asked this by your church council. In the packet, we have the legal opinion that if you stay within the perimeters of the program, do what God's people have always done, there is no problem. We are not a crisis pregnancy center. We do not offer pregnancy tests. We will give a pregnancy kit, but we do not go into that area. We are different. We do not use coercion. We do not use clever trickery. We want to just present ourselves, what we, by the grace of God, are and can be, the compassionate Christ, the body of Christ in the world today. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you so much.